This is episode 37 of the Christian Research Journal Reads podcast. The Christian Research Journal Reads podcast presents audio versions of Christian Research Journal articles. You can read the full text along with all the documentation at equip.org. That's EQUIP.org. This is a film review of Alien Romulus, rated R, directed by Fede Alvarez, 20th Century Studios, 2024. Alien Romulus, Risk Aversion, and the Parable of the Big Bad Company, by Cole Burgett. Editors note, this review contains spoilers for the film Alien Romulus. 2024 is the year of blockbuster sequels, Dune Part 2, Godzilla, Times Kong, The New Empire, Furiosa, A Mad Max Saga, Twisters, Deadpool, and Wolverine, to name a few. And now the year has given us yet another in the form of Alien Romulus. From the moment I saw the very first teaser for this film, I was probably less enthused than most of my sci-fi horror-loving friends. And the more I saw about the film leading up to the release, the more I became convinced my earliest apprehensions were right. The whole affair just seemed to retread the ground already covered in Ridley Scott's 1979 original masterpiece. Everything from the cinematography to the character design seemed intentionally set on evoking the gloomy and murky style of Alien rather than doing something new with the material. What I was not prepared for was how the film would actually invoke the original in everything from the central protagonist to the very structure of the narrative itself. Practically every story beat of Alien Romulus is lifted from Alien, even if what actually happens is slightly different. But if you know the formula of Alien, then you will have every major twist that the movie tries to throw at you figured out in the first 20 minutes. There is really a hilarious sort of irony at work in the opening sequence, which depicts a salvage team scouring the remains of the Nostromo, the iconic space tug from the first film. If the thesis of the movie is, quote, "We're going to plunder the bones of what came before in an effort to reconstruct something as closely to that as we possibly can," end quote, then nobody on the production team even attempted to be subtle about it. I left the theater really debating with myself. What was it about Alien Romulus that made the whole affair seem like a great big sigh, followed by a shoulder shrug? Was it that I just spent the day lecturing from bell to bell in all of my classes? Was it that I had seen the film in Dolby with its literally hundreds of loudspeakers and still somehow struggled to understand the words the characters were whispering for the first third of the film? Was it that I was so uninterested in what quickly became one of the most predictable, almost two-hour slogs that I've ever sat through, that I nearly fell asleep at two early points in a surprisingly not packed-out theater? What I've settled on is none of the above, though all are true. No, it seems to me that Alien Romulus is simply the victim of an extremely cynical approach to filmmaking that is almost completely at odds with the kind of moxie and damn the torpedoes attitude that got movies like the original made. It smacks of such a lack of confidence that Alien Romulus feels it must worship at the altar of Ridley Scott to such a degree that the very template of Alien must be copied and pasted to the point where both movies have nearly the exact same runtime, literally a 3-minute difference, and you can chalk that up to the credits. So it should come as no surprise that the new film is just as indebted to the original thematically as it is stylistically. Alien writer Dan O'Bannon gave audiences a bleak look at a future in which corporate greed has run unchecked even into the far reaches of the solar system and beyond. The nameless, quote, company, end quote, which would, in later sequels, be identified as Weyland Yutani, is shown to exhibit the absolute worst aspects of corporate profiteering and a reckless, even ruthless, disregard for human life in pursuit of the almighty dollar. Alien is one of sci-fi's most pointed criticism of capitalism, and it makes sense that a sequel so obsessed with mimicking the original would carry over those themes as well. Dark things in dark places. The path to the original Alien is the stuff of legend. Ridley Scott, a young, depressed filmmaker feeling horribly inadequate after seeing the cultural phenomenon that was George Lucas's Star Wars take the world by storm in 1977, was tapped for a new kind of sci-fi project by the executives at 20th Century Fox. Pitched as Jaws in Space, the story originally called Star Beast more or less retained the same idea as the finished product. Following a blue-collar crew of spacers who encounter a monstrous extraterrestrial among the stars. The design of the titular monster was instantly iconic, having been developed by Swiss-born maestro of nightmare artwork, H.R. Giger. Combining the horrific with the grotesque, Giger produced the famous Xenomorph as the big bad of Scott's film, with its strange, elongated black head, deadly tail, razor-like teeth, and unnaturally spindly body, making the monster truly feel like the deadliest organism one could imagine encountering in the black void of space. From the moment the xenomorph burst onto the scene, quite literally, the monster redefined the science fiction genre for the screen, merging visceral terror with a haunting and realistic depiction of space travel that was a far cry from the optimistic utopia of Roddenberry's Star Trek, 1966 through 69, or the high adventure of Lucas's Star Wars. The industrial lived-in design of the Nostromo set a new standard for the genre's aesthetic, going on to influence countless later projects from Ron Moore's brilliant reimagining of Battlestar Galactica, 2003, 2004 through 2009, to the much-lauded Dead Space video game franchise. Besides the design elements, perhaps the most significant contribution Alien made to the cultural landscape was the introduction of Warrant Officer Ellen Ripley, portrayed by Sigourney Weaver. Not only did Ripley break new ground as a female protagonist in the sci-fi genre, which was largely dominated by male heroes, but she shot her way into the horror landscape as a distinctly different kind of final girl. More than a survivor, Ripley was a decisive, capable, no-nonsense leader who confronted the darkness of space and the horrors that awaited there with the grit and tenacity of the most iconic Western heroes, quickly solidifying her status as one of cinema's most influential heroines. A hit with filmgoers, Alien won an Oscar for Best Visual Effects and nabbed three coveted Saturn Awards, including one for Scott. It was a safe bet the universe Scott created would expand, and it did so nearly a decade later with a young James Cameron at the helm. In another staggering accomplishment of cinema, Cameron crafted a sequel that, for many, supplants even the original. Subtly titled Aliens, 1986, Cameron was wise not to try to follow in Scott's footsteps by recreating or evoking the mood of the original, an approach that is polar opposite of Alien Romulus, and the end results speak for themselves. Under Cameron's direction, the sequel transformed the horror of the first film into a high-octane action spectacle while retaining the central themes of corporate exploitation and the terrifying potential of unchecked scientific ambition. The introduction of the Colonel Marines and the return of Ripley as a fierce protector in the role of surrogate mother added layers of commentary on militarism and motherhood, two of Cameron's most familiar themes to be celebrated and dissected by audiences and critics alike. Aliens remains a masterclass in how to do a sequel to a masterpiece effectively, proving that a follow-up could stand alongside its predecessor when enough narrative risk is taken with an eye toward enriching and fleshing out the world of the story. Subsequent entries, however, were met with mixed receptions as they attempted to balance innovation with nostalgia. David Fincher's Alien 3, 1992, and Jean-Pierre Jeunet's Alien Resurrection, 1997, each brought different visions to the series with varying degrees of success. While these films continued to explore themes of survival, identity, and the ethics of creation, they struggled under the weight of franchise expectations and studio interference. The prequels, Prometheus, 2012, and Alien Covenant, 2017, saw Ridley Scott return to the director's chair and expand the lore with heavy philosophical explorations of the origins of the xenomorphs and artificial intelligence. Ambitious in scope, the films were quite polarizing, with some praising their audacity, while others lamenting the loss of the franchise horror genre roots. Now, Alien Romulus is in theaters and seeks to recover that perceived loss by following the template of the original film to several faults. The reviews are positive by and large, and Alien Romulus is undoubtedly a skillfully crafted, well-made 21st century sci-fi horror flick. But it is, ultimately, a skillfully crafted, well-made 21st century sci-fi horror pastiche, which perhaps mistakes an overall lack of confidence in the franchise's potential for dedication to the original film. Bad Company. The Alien series, with its exploration of corporate greed and the fragility of human life, offers the cultural apologist a few opportunities to engage in meaningful conversations about faith. At its core, this is a franchise that wrestles with the questions of existence, creation, and the ethics of power. The portrayal of Weyland Yutani, the nameless company of the original film, as an entity willing to sacrifice human lives for profit, is a prime example of the dangers of money-hungry materialism. The first film works almost as a kind of parable, warning against the dangers of placing wealth and power above basic human dignity. It is a more vague, but perhaps more culturally appropriate, example of the dirty underside of greed that Jesus excavates when he points out to his disciple that, quote, "It is hard for a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven. And again, I say to you, it is easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter the kingdom of God," end quote. Matthew 19:23-24, New King James Version. And while the prequels were not incredibly well received, they are certainly more philosophically minded than any of the other films in the series. They provide a basic framework for discussions about a creator being who imbues life with purpose and meaning, and then contrast those purposes and meanings with the dangers of hubris and the pursuit of knowledge without moral boundaries. See how well this works out for the man and woman in Eden in Genesis 6. Moreover, the repeated theme of isolation and existential dread in the Alien films points to humanity's innate need for connection. The vast empty spaces of the Nostromo, LV-426, and the alien worlds depicted in the prequels highlight the pervasive sense of loneliness and vulnerability that accompanies the human condition when people find themselves severed from meaningful relationships. And perhaps this is one of the reasons why Alien Romulus just did not work as well for me as it has for many of my contemporaries. The connection that we're supposed to care about in the movie is between the girl, Rain, Kaylee Spaney, and her android, Andy, David Johnson. While all of the human characters, including Rain's ex-boyfriend, Tyler, Archie Renault, are killed off in various gnarly ways, we are meant to root for Rain and her connection to what is essentially a robot, which is pretty much all that's left of her late family. Now, I suppose I could prattle on pretentiously about how this is meant to provoke deep questions about android consciousness, which, frankly, the video game Detroit Become Human handles much more interestingly. But at the end of the day, it all boils down to a story about a girl trying to rescue an inanimate object with a chip for a brain while all of the humans slip away. Maybe if the story felt compelled to take a risk, we could have had a scene where Andy helps Rain to learn to let go of her parents and, as a result, move beyond her own isolation to actually care for another human crew member. Maybe Andy could have taught Rain to give him up to actually save Kay, Isabella Merced. However, that would have meant one less death scene, and that just wouldn't do, because Ripley was the final girl. Rain has to be the final girl, too. But hey, at least there's one cool zero-gravity scene. That was nifty. Thank you for listening to another episode from the Christian Research Journal Reads podcast, which provides audio articles of Christian Research Journal articles. If you go to equip.org, you will find a brand new article for the Christian Research Journal published weekly. In addition, please subscribe to our other podcasts. Wherever you find your favorite podcasts, you will find the Christian Research Journal Reads podcast, the Postmodern Realities podcast, which features interviews with Christian Research Journal authors, our flagship podcast, the Bible Answer Man broadcast, and the Hank Unplugged podcast, where CRI President Hank Hanegraaff takes you out of the studio and into his study to engage in in-depth, free-flowing, essential Christian conversations on critical issues with some of the most interesting and informative people on the planet. At equip.org, you will also find a lot of resources to equip you, including many thousands of Christian Research Journal articles. That's equip.org.